This is the Car Dealer Podcast driven by CarGurus. You want the best return for your advertising budgets, and CarGurus Piston Heads are focused on the same goal. With them, you have access to millions of monthly shoppers across both sites. Connect with in-market high-quality buyers today and turbocharge your digital forecourt. For more information, visit dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk and schedule a demo with their team. That's dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk and tell them we sent you.
Welcome back to the Car Dealer Podcast. If you haven't listened before, we pick our favourite stories of the week and ask an industry guest to choose which were the best. I'm John Ray, and joining me this week is an actor and writer whose performance in an Alo Alo stage adaptation was described by the Petersfield Post as quite visible. It's James Batchelor.
It was actually described as lovely stuff, actually. Hello, John. Hello. Lovely to be back. Really lovely to be back.
Is it?
Yes. Can you sense the sense of trepidation in my voice? Because, August, I mean, this particular week in August, I mean, every single year is always a bit slow, but I feel as though this week in particular has been very, very slow. And me, primarily me, and of course the rest of the editorial team, have been trying to keep the fires burning bright, but there's not been much news around, has there?
No, there hasn't. I mean, I should preface this by saying that it does sound a little bit like you're covering your backside, because you have been the only one here over this week, predominantly, haven't you?
Yes, yeah, I have.
Writing.
Yes, I have. I have, to be perfectly honest with you. And so...
So what you're saying is you couldn't find enough news this week.
I couldn't find enough news, and consequently, this podcast might be a bit rubbish. More so than usual.
Yeah. So is there anything you'd like to talk about before then, just to pad out our time in this very quiet news week of August? Have you done anything fun this week? Just been news writing?
No, I haven't actually. Although, to chime in with your lovely intro for me, I've just been cast in a new play, actually, which was last night. So I'm very much looking forward to that. November production.
When are tickets available?
Tickets will be available. It's a farce, and as per usual, involves me taking my trousers off. Right. So anyway,
let's move swiftly on from that. So our guest this week is category lead for vehicle parts and accessories at eBay, Laura Richards. Welcome, Laura.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Lovely to have you on.
Laura, I'm surprised you didn't disappear after that. Oh, we're talking absolute rubbish and involved me chat about me taking my trousers off. So thank you for sticking with us. Thank you.
If you can keep your trousers on for the podcast, that'd be great.
Well, yes. Okay. Viewers, we can't see below James's waist, but we'll assume it's all fine. So, Laura, in your kind of your remit, obviously quite a large area of things you look after there at eBay, but I suspect you want to talk about one specific thing or a couple of specific things, which is the certified recycling program that eBay has set up recently. And there's an accompanying white paper, which I've been reading through, which makes a very interesting reading, I must say. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that scheme and how it came to be set up?
Yeah, certainly. So I think firstly, what is certified recycled? So ultimately, it's a recycled car part. We might maybe have different terminologies for it across different industries or different types of buyers, but you can call it a used car part, a green car part, a salvaged car part, but it's ultimately a secondhand car part that's removed predominantly from an end-of-life vehicle. Mm. And again, predominantly, they are an OEM car part, so they're the original part that was on the vehicle at the point of manufacturing. Like there's across the UK, we've got 2,500 businesses that work in the processes of scrapping vehicles, and some of those businesses either just scrap the vehicles for metal value, or they actually go through different processes of removing the parts from the vehicles. But keeping in mind it is a secondhand car part, and there is different levels of consistency in terms of the quality of the particular part. So a few years ago at eBay, we did a bunch of research into Right, number one, do customers like buying these car parts? And the answer is yes. There's good reasons behind it, and we'll sort of build on that later. But what are the key barriers and sort of, I guess, maybe issues you have when it comes to buying those parts? So I think one of the key areas that we wanted to build on from our research was the trust element behind buying a secondhand car part. And it's super important to get consistency. So a good example is when you buy a secondhand mobile phone. There's plenty of them on the market these days, and those mobile phones are graded. So you grade A, B, C, and that ultimately allows you to determine, right, if I get a grade A, it's the top quality part. So within the certification scheme for car parts, we have a grading system. So the recyclers will test and visually inspect every single part they take off the car. So for example, if you're taking a door off, what they'll do is they'll have a look at the quality of the door. Has it been resprayed? Is there any dinks or any dents anywhere? And if there's like less than a unit of credit cards worth of damage, that's a grade A. So that's almost as good as new. And the same with mechanical components is based on the mileage of the parts as well. And the second piece around trust is, okay, great, I can determine the quality, but what if 2 months down the line something happens with that part? Normally, if I'm buying from a dealer or if I'm buying directly from a reseller, there is a warranty, but previously there may not have been. So now all of the certified recyclers offer a warranty period for every single part they sell. So that's 12 months on mechanical items and 3 months on bodywork. So you as a customer, John and James, you can go, okay, I'm happy to buy that part, and there is a warranty on it as well. And for provenance and safety, every single certified recycler has to have a recall process. So before they list that part on eBay, they have to make sure it hasn't been recalled from the manufacturer, again, for safety reasons. And then every single part that is sold from them has proof of provenance. So that's ultimately paperwork that goes all the way back to the donor vehicle at that point in time. So trust, I guess, is the key element that we want to drive here. They're great parts, right? They have a really obvious place in the supply chain when it comes to businesses as well as consumers, but it's just removing some of those barriers.
There's obviously a lot of work behind the scenes has gone into all this because, as you say, used, whatever you want to call them, car parts have been around forever. I mean, we've all been buying them for perhaps cars that are taken off the road, such as James Batchelor's lovely MG, whatever it is, where the parts are no longer made. So there's that element of it, but there's also the cost element and the green element, and also the well, there's a new element at the minute, isn't there, which is parts, lack of parts availability. Is that, do you think, the thing that is pushing people into doing this now is not so much cost and not so much the green element, much as we would like to be green, but it's simply that if they want this new part for their car, they're going to have to wait 6 months for it because that's the supply chain issue at the minute, whereas they can have a secondhand, refurbished, recycled one almost immediately.
Yeah, I think it's a beautiful storm that's got us to a very critical point in the sector that you're absolutely right. So over the last 2 to 3 years, we've had supply chain issues from Brexit, we've had pandemic post supply chain issues, and obviously the war going on at the moment has seriously impacted the supply chain. So the nice thing about the certification program is every single seller is based in the UK. And I think up to 95% of the parts are available with next day delivery. So yeah, quite often is the case, and I'm hearing it from friends and family. They go to a dealer to try and get something fixed on their car, and it's up to potentially 3 to 4 months waiting time. And then I guess if you look at the insurance side of the business, where predominantly they are doing pure, mostly bodywork repair, sort of day in, day out. There's the key to key time, which is then measurable. So the longer the body shops have to wait for the parts to come in, the longer your car is off the road, the longer and the more expensive it is to actually do that repair because there's the higher car costs involved as well. So the supply chain issues are having massive impacts across the whole chain in terms of increased cost too.
So previously, this has just been mainly private buyers fixing their own cars, hasn't it? Going for these parts. Obviously, you want to kind of expand this into insurance industry is one, but also dealers is obviously our audience listening today. So what can dealers do to start moving towards the option of offering used parts? Because I think there's lots of barriers in terms of what consumers think about secondhand or recycled parts, isn't there? A lot of benefits, obviously, but there's this slight tendency to think, oh no, I think I'll just have a new one.
Yeah, we are seeing a movement with OEMs and manufacturers looking certainly into the green space and how they can incorporate more of this into their strategy. And I guess from a dealer's perspective, it's important to serve your customers' needs. And will you retain your customer by offering them an alternative proposition that is certified, approved, and of good quality? And at the same time, potentially look at passing some of those savings onto the customer. I know it's really, really important for dealers to look at strategies to keep their customers that move on after the 3-year period and potentially then own a used car. Well, hey, actually the majority of the secondhand car parts that we have are there to serve the older vehicle market that's over 3 years old. So it's potentially a good retention strategy to be able to offer a certified recycled part that comes with the receipts, the warranties, and everything that they almost offer themselves. And then there's a lot of manufacturers looking into their carbon footprint. So, you know, for example, Renault's leading the way over in France with their Indra partnership, where they're bringing a lot of recycled parts back into their dealership network. So as a way to reduce your overall carbon footprint, you can use certified recycled. Just to give you some stats, so last year, for all of the parts that were sold on ebay.co.uk that were secondhand, that was the equivalent of just over 16,000 tons of CO2 that were saved from those parts, right? That's pretty significant. And then there's plenty more opportunity because at the moment, there's a lot more parts available on the vehicles that are able to get onto eBay, and that's one thing we're helping them with. So basically the sky's the limit. You can offset your carbon footprint, you can keep your customer in dealership for longer, and you can potentially offer them savings with the green angle as well.
Laura, would you say there's a bit of a stigma around secondhand car parts? And there's potentially an education piece that needs to be made about, you know, there's a green message, they are perfectly certified, you know, blah, blah, blah. Or do you think that's not a case, and that's just a bit of an incorrect generalisation?
Maybe 10 years ago, you had the kind of image of going to a salvage yard and kicking some tyres and taking a set of like Allen keys down and just putting stuff off yourself. But no, I think this is why we're here. This is why we're talking with you. Perceptions have changed. These recyclers' facilities are pretty much state of the art. Back 10 years, 15, 20 years ago, they aren't what they used to be. We have one of our large recyclers on eBay. They're called Charles Trent. I don't know if you've seen them, but they have the UK's leading deproduction facilities. So rather than like...
Good name.
They have robots, they have cars going down the line, and they have people as well. And they can basically remove everything off that car that has a resale value in 15 minutes. And then it's boxed and on a shelf and it's in their warehouse, and they've got over 70,000 parts boxed and ready to go. And trust me, that facility is cleaner than some of the other sort of new car parts sellers facilities that I've seen. So yeah, it's the misconception is potentially still there with some people, but we're starting to see, you know, younger people coming in asking for greener alternatives, businesses, the business sector accepting that it is part of, you know, the supply chain now, and generally perceptions are changing. And this is why we're here, raising the profile of the certification scheme.
I can also imagine, particularly with a younger generation of people who feel as though if they've gone and done the research and they've gone and found the part themselves, they may potentially give that to the garage or the dealer to fit. But because they've sourced it themselves, they feel as though it's more genuine. Whereas perhaps people who aren't, you know, perhaps so mechanically minded, if they take their car to a garage, there may be a feeling that that they may be sort of being ripped off or something like that. So I suppose there's a feeling that if you're doing the research yourself and you're finding the parts yourself, it may be a little bit more genuine.
Yeah. And if you have got, you've got two types of buyers, people that feel confident buying mechanical components for their cars themselves. And we make it super easy for them on eBay just by saying, look, pop your vehicle registration in. Type what you want. Is it an engine? Pop your reg in. And then we'll pre-filter all of the search results just to fit your vehicle. And then they can buy that, have it shipped to the garage, and then the garage can ultimately fit it for them. We have got the other feature as well, which is where you saved your car in My Garage. And then every time you come into eBay, we've already pre-populated your search results based on the car that you own. So yeah, it gives the buyers can have more of a right when it comes to the garage and say that I found this, it's got a warranty, I'm happy for you to fit it to my car, can you fit it to my car? But on the flip side, I think customers should be going to the garages and asking for an alternative. In the sense of, I know I can save money, and I don't mind a certified recycled engine. Let's use the engine as an example, fitted to my car. Hey, Mr. Joe Blogs at the garage, can you please go ahead and do this for me? And it's not uncommon that it happens a lot already, right? We see a huge amount of the purchases on eBay have done from businesses like garages and body shops.
So what sort of parts are garages or whoever predominantly buying? Does it tend to be bodywork items, you know, like where there's been a smashed headlight or something like that, and that's an easy thing to replace? Or are people going as far as interior parts, engines, gearboxes, all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, so it's kind of split into two sectors. So the body shop industry, which serves insurance claims, they tend to avoid safety related items for obvious reasons. And mechanical components, and they'll focus on bodywork. So bumpers, doors, the usual kind of headlights. Obviously, we sell a lot of headlights. So it all tends to be the exterior part focus. Sometimes interior, again, if it's not safety related. Sell a lot of secondhand parcel shelves for some reason.
Because there was going missing, that's why.
Yeah, exactly. And then on the other side for garages, it is majority of the time it'll be mechanical things, so gearboxes, engines, drive shafts. Anything that is high value from the dealer, you would generally look to find an alternative replacement through a certified recycled. Things like brake pads, brake discs, spark plugs are just too low value to even warrant. And again, from a safety perspective. Yeah.
Interesting. Right. Well, I will. Shall I move us on to our stories? Because I'm sure we will talk about, there are some recycling related stories in the news this week. So if you haven't listened before, Batch and I have chosen our favorite stories from the car dealer website this week, and we don't know what each other has chosen. We're going to have a chat about each one as we go through. At the end, Laura gets to decide whose stories were the best and who is the winner. If you want to play along, you can tweet at Car Dealer Mag and let us know if you think we've missed anything. Can't remember who won last week. Was it me?
I think it was you. It was you. Yes.
It was me. So I'm going to go first, which is awkward because I haven't actually chosen which story to go for first.
I sort of fear that we're going to have this week is going to be the same as last week, where there's going to be a bit of crossover, isn't there? So well, it might be quite a short week. Podcast.
Well, that'd be nice. And then I can have an early lunch. So I'm going to start with one of our usual items, which is from Cap HPI. It's in August. So August used car values, biggest drop for 13 years is the headline. However, says Darren, there's no price crash on the way, which is a phrase we have repeated many, many times now. But there is still no crash on the way. It's a minor adjustment, isn't it? In the grand scheme of things, it's 2% drop. Well, I say it's a minor adjustment. It's quite a big drop. But in the context of prices being where they are, it's still not a huge amount. So it's the biggest drop since August 2010. But as I say, prices are 25% higher still than they were 3 years ago. So really, it's a leveling out of valuations. This drop has been more over ICE vehicles than electric, by the looks of it. So EVs dropped 1.7%, and it was 2.1% for petrol and diesel cars. So I'm sure we'll be publishing in due course a list of all the cars that have gone up and down, which is always makes for interesting reading. But that's your headline: 2.1 for petrol and diesel, 1.7 for EV. So EV still dropping a little bit. But of course, within that, there's lots of ups and downs depending on the particular EV. So I look forward to seeing the exact figures on that one. Batch, what did you think of this 2% drop?
Well,
obviously a bit of a struggle at the minute for an August, which is always a struggly time anyway, isn't it?
Well, yes. I mean, yeah. I mean, you were in the interview that I did with Darren yesterday on this, and I was expecting like a 2% fall, a gradual fall. I mean, there were two surprising things for me in this. Firstly, Darren said that the average fall in August is normally around 0.6%.
Right.
Whereas this year it was quite a lot larger than that. And secondly, EVs, I know you mentioned it then, but EVs, they didn't fall as much as ICE cars, which that has been one of the major topics all of this year, hasn't it? You know, the plummeting values. I mean, we love to use the, you know, we journalists love to use the word plummet, don't we? And that has been the sort of the story this year where EV values have been falling. And that does chime in with another story that we ran this week from Auto Trader, which said, which of course this story is about retail and CAPHPI is about trade. But from Auto Trader, they were saying, look, used EV prices are starting to stabilize now. So there were a couple of interesting things from Darren, and I would imagine that in September next month, there's going to be more supply coming in, of course. But the big question is the level of demand. Darren said it again in the interview that, supply may well be coming back into the used car sector, but we're now facing a period where, you know, people's fixed mortgages are coming to an end. Mm. Interest rates are high. So is there still that propensity to buy from consumers? So, I would imagine September is going to be another fall, but it's just probably going to be another marginal fall. You know, we are still in the position where used car prices are 25% higher than they were 3 years ago. So, yes, you know, and I did write the headline, it's the biggest fall since August 2010. But in the grand scheme of things, this is still a tiny little drop. And as Darren always says, it's a realignment, not a price crash. So,
yes, I was just about to use that phrase.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Laura, just be interesting to get your views on this. Not precisely this, but about EVs in general. I mean, are you seeing many sort of EV parts starting to come onto the secondhand car market? Because I know they've been around for a while now, but is it primarily the traditional kinds of cars which parts are being recycled and bought, or is it also EVs are starting to make an appearance?
Yeah, we're starting to see the rise of EV. I think they've been around now enough in the sort of the supply chain for us to start to see that secondhand life value. Not huge, definitely not as huge as your traditional ICE vehicle, but it's definitely an emerging trend.
I was going to say, what kinds of parts are you seeing being recycled? I mean, are they just run-of-the-mill common items, or are they EV specific items such as like batteries and motors? I would imagine batteries and motors are, particularly batteries, are very difficult to recycle and pass on, but what kinds of things are you seeing?
It's just traditional things, so they still have crashes and they still have doors, and they still have headlights. Obviously not so much in the mechanical sector of things, but and batteries are being dealt with by recyclers as well, so they are trying to either re-harness them or resell them. Mm-hmm. Definitely, obviously not any engines, for example.
Yeah. Right, shall I move this on then, Johnny Ray?
Do.
Well, it's actually, this dovetails quite nicely with this story. I mean, yes, there wasn't a huge amount of news breaking this week, but this one did catch my eye. JLR.
You've stolen this. I was going to do that as well.
Well, you stole the Cap HPI story. So, I mean, it's fair enough. Yes, JLR, they've announced a bold new plan, which will see it recycle old EV batteries to create a new renewable energy storage system. So JLR's teamed up with a leading renewable energy specialist to create a new energy storage system using old batteries from the Jaguar I-Pace. Like Laura alluded to there, I mean, there are firms already doing this. You know, it's not a new thing. I suppose the new element to this is that there's, you know, Britain's largest car maker is wading into this and recognizing that this is a major, you know, thing that we've got to tackle, isn't it? And the more electric cars that we sell, the question of how we can recycle key components, particularly batteries, becomes ever more important. It's great. It's great JLR are doing this. But like we were talking a little bit about last week, Johnny Ray, it does feel as though, you know, this should have been happening a while ago, really, shouldn't it? Yeah, I'm not taking away from JLR, and it's great that they're doing this. But, you know, electric cars aren't suddenly an overnight phenomenon. They've been around, well, in the mass market for over 10 years now. And, you know, I'm surprised that we are having these conversations about recycling batteries, because, you know, it's a major part of the whole ecosystem of electric car production and how you move those electric cars on in the future. So what do you think, John?
Well, this is in the definition of recycling, similar to eBay there, which is it's not recycling in terms of you put your plastic bottle in a bin and then it gets melted down and turned into something else, which is quite, you know, it's great it's being recycled, but it's quite carbon intensive. This is reusing in terms of recycling and all that sort of stuff, isn't it? So they bottle these batteries together. It's 30 batteries, and with that they can supply or store power for 250 homes for a day, which just shows, so 30 car batteries is 250 homes, so that shows how much power is actually in these EV batteries. And I think, yeah, it's as you say, it's interesting that we haven't heard anything about this before. But I suppose there's been a lot of focus on what do we do with these batteries after they're spent? And perhaps, when did the I-Pace come out? The I-Pace came out 6 years ago. So I suppose
2018, I think it was.
Yeah, like, so not even 6 years ago. And I suppose if we talk about the life cycle of a battery, it's probably 10 years plus. Perhaps there hasn't been a need to do it until now. I mean, I read something about Nissan and have a battery recycling plant somewhere. I can't remember if it's Japan or the USA or somewhere, but they set up this battery recycling plant and nothing was happening in it, simply because nobody didn't want the batteries out of a crashed Leaf. They were going to be reused for something else. So they just weren't making it back to this recycling plant in the first place, which is great news if you think about it, because at least they're being used somewhere or other, or the cars simply are continuing to work as they're supposed to. So I suppose from that point of view, that's probably why we haven't heard about any of this before. But I think I think it's really interesting, all this sort of stuff. And it just, we talk, there's a lot of talk about the grid at the minute and how the grid isn't set up for the amount of power we need for the future, let alone plugging in EVs overnight or into rapid chargers and all this sort of stuff. And they talk about the, you know, as we shift to renewables, one of the things that people talk about is the base load, don't they? Like, we've got to have a base level of electricity available at all times, regardless of whether the wind has stopped blowing and the sun has stopped shining. And we talk about nuclear as being the solution to that, which, fine, maybe it is, but we're not building the plants quick enough, are we? But another option for that is to level it out with lots of batteries and to store that sort of stuff, to store power, because that's the problem with electricity. It doesn't really hang around for very long. You kind of have to either keep generating it on demand, or you have to store it and feed it back into the grid. So as more and more EVs get sold and taken apart, if their batteries aren't good enough to go back into cars, then I think at least they can be used for something like this. It's a good thing. Mm. What do you think, Laura?
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's a nice sort of tie into how does the recycling sector work more closely with the manufacturers to support these initiatives, right?
Mm.
At the end of the day, they're getting a lot of the end of the supply from the cars. And are they saying JLR, is it more to power local towns, or is it their production facilities that they want to use the batteries for?
I haven't really said, but I think it's theoretically it's just for the grid wherever it's needed. I think it's just they've used the home example to show how much power it is, I suppose.
It's great. Yeah. But I'd love to see what their strategy would be with regards to how do they get them back into their network, for example.
Mm.
What is the strategy?
Yes, that's very true, because of course they're quite low volume at the minute comparatively, Jaguar Land Rover with EV batteries. I've only got one EV, but that is set to change, isn't it?
It's just part of a wider change that's needed from consumers as well, isn't it? I think that, and this is going to take a very long time for this to happen. But you know, it's once we get to the stage when people are okay about the fact that yes, the battery in their car does degrade, but that's not a problem. If there is an easy way to replace the battery, it's a cost efficient way of changing the battery, and there is also a thriving recycling element to that as well, then I don't think we're going to be having these conversations in the future. But at the moment, of course, we are, aren't they? I mean, that is one of the big things that is sort of slung at EVs, isn't it? That batteries degrade too much, and they are too costly to replace, and there aren't enough uses for them once they are spent. So again, like so much with electric cars, we're talking about it now, but you know, hopefully in the future we won't be having these conversations, because it's just part of this whole change in what we do, and the whole ecosystem around electric cars is just there, and you know.
Mm. And the other interesting thing for me with it, and as we see this going forward, is it does show that batteries, whether we decide that they're not big, you know, don't have enough capacity for a car or not, they still have an inherent value because they're still being used, aren't they? You know, if you take, I think I can't remember what the warranties normally are. It's something like 75% of capacity or 80% of capacity, and then they replace them, don't they, if it's within warranty. But 80% of a car battery is still a lot of power, isn't it? If you think about some of these are 70 kilowatt hour batteries, or even a Leaf's 24 kilowatt hour battery with 50% in it is still quite a lot of power. It's just not enough power to get you 30 miles and back, unfortunately. But that still has value and weight to it, doesn't it? I mean, presumably, how much? I saw something recently with I saw an eBay release recently about the most expensive parts that have been sold. And I think one of them was a Nissan Leaf battery, wasn't it? It was about £7,000 or something for a... I'm testing you here.
You are testing me. Yeah, there was definitely an EV vehicle in our top five list. Alongside the Ferrari luggage, there was definitely something for an EV vehicle. So yeah, I'm just looking, having a quick look on eBay at the moment, Nissan Leaf batteries, and there's plenty listed on there for sale. And I think that a lot of them are going in for alternative applications other than powering cars.
We'll be right back. You want the best return from your advertising budget, and CarGurus Piston Heads are focused on the same goal. With them, you have access to millions of monthly shoppers across both sites. Connect with in-market, high-quality buyers today and turbocharge your digital forecourt. For more information, visit dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk and schedule a demo with their team. That's dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk, and tell them we sent you. Now, let's get back to the quiz.
Is it me?
It is you, yes. And you're probably going to take another one of my stories, aren't you?
It's quite likely, because we've had about four. So I am going to touch on the results of Dealer Group listers who have made £40.5 million in profit. Jolly nice for them. However, the bit I'm going to focus on is that they've warned, there's a bit in their results, warning about fixed price agency sales and how that could hit their earnings in the years going forward. So I will do a bit more resulty things. So their turnover was 1.29 billion for 2023 against the 1.23 billion the year before. So decent increase there. And profit is up to 40.5 million from 39.3. Apparently, the Audi, JLR, Mercedes, Toyota, and Volkswagen divisions were the most significant contributions to group profit. So jolly nice for those. However, getting onto that thing I started talking about, they have warned against this fixed price agency thing. So the directors have put in their statement, certain motor vehicle manufacturers with which the company had or currently has franchise agreements have moved or are considering moving to agency agreements for the sale of new vehicles, which will reduce the group's turnover and potentially impact profitability. The potential impact is expected to vary between agency sale models of different manufacturers and importers, depending on the level of commission and the potential cost savings that can be achieved. So to me, this is just, I mean, we prattle on about it so much, don't we, agency sales, and it's a very difficult topic to talk about in a way, because there's, as they have said, there's lots of different models for the agency model. But it's proving evidently quite difficult for even relatively big dealer groups to deal with, because how do you know what your future looks like? You know, how do you know what these margins are going to be on these cars? It's a very difficult time, isn't it, James Batchelor?
No, it is. And I, funnily enough, I had this story. So
did you?
Thank you for beating me to it. No, I had this story as well. And the point that I was going to make was, I've written quite a few account stories this week.
Humble brag.
It wasn't humble brag. It's just I've spent my life on Companies House this week, which is, you know, a delightful experience. I've sort of homed in on the line that all the dealer groups have been making, and the general view that they've, you know, other companies have been making is that they are on board with it. You know, they make the statement that they are aware that they are having these conversations with different manufacturers about agency sales, and they're feeling positive about it and looking forward to working with manufacturers on these new revenue streams. And it was listers, you're absolutely right, who have come out and said something completely different, which I sort of appreciated them being a little bit honest, because you're absolutely right. I mean, it is how do we know what the future is going to be like? And if you are running, you know, a very successful dealer group, and the dealer groups that have put out their accounts this week, most of them are showing that they're doing very well at the moment. Lots of, you know, pre-tax profit is looking very strong. Turnover in particular is looking very good for a lot of car dealers. But agency sales could really change all of that. So I was pleased in some way that listers came out and said that, because they're just being honest, really, aren't they?
Which, of course, they have to be in a document of this nature.
Well, they do, yes. But like I was saying, I mean, you know, I do feel as though there is a notion that we've all got to be positive about this, because there's nothing we can sort of do about it. Whereas listers were just saying exactly what they think.
Mm. On a more positive note, they have said that new car supply constraints were getting better as the semiconductor crisis eases. And they reckon if there's any supply issues, because I think there's a little bit of supply issues here and there still, isn't there? They reckon that, you know, lack of supply from one or more manufacturers is not going to have a massive impact. So that does seem to have leveled out a little bit.
Yes, yes. But there, I mean, a few of these account stories that we've been writing this week, I mean, most of the dealers have been saying that they have reaped the rewards of a better new car supply. I mean, another one said they've been enjoying the higher margins enjoyed from the sale of new and used car sales. But there are also a couple who said, look, you know, we've actually had, you know, our profits have actually taken a bit of a nosedive because of poor new car supply, you know, customers waiting for cars. And some of those customers have actually cancelled their orders and gone elsewhere. So it's a very different picture depending on the types of cars and the brands of cars that you sell. But, you know, that's a given, really, isn't it?
Not to cannibalize your other stories, but have any kind of pointed to cost of living crisis and
no, not really. But all of them have said in their future outlook statements that it is one that they are. And I love this phrase, not love this phrase, but this seems to be the in phrase at the moment, is they are very cognizant. The word cognizant. I've never seen the word cognizant used so many times in so many documents in the space of a week. But there are many dealers who are very aware that the cost of living crisis is potentially only going to get worse. And it goes back to what Darren was saying, wasn't it? What we were saying earlier on, that, you know, we are now starting to see those fixed price mortgages coming to an end, and people will make a decision on, well, actually, I can't afford that new car, or I can't afford that used car. I'm going to have to drop my aspirations down a couple of notches. So, yeah, I think we're going to be seeing more of that in the months to come.
Okay, back to you then. That was my story, wasn't it? I stole.
Yes. Just a brief one here. So Virtue this week, they have announced that they've appointed Spencer Clayton Jones. He's an individual I'm sure many of our listeners will know and probably worked pretty closely with. Spencer was previously part of Nissan GB. He was the director of network development and customer quality. I mean, his most recent sort of thing at Nissan was enacting the ideal network plan, the customer quality transformation plans. Of course, this ideal network plan sort of saw the network shrink a little bit. So I'm sure many Nissan dealers will be aware of Clayton. But it's a great hire for Virtue. Spencer is, he's had many years in the industry, not with just Nissan, but Volkswagen as well. 23 years experience in the automotive sector. And again, this is another sign that Virtue is really, it's just a business that's going places, really, isn't it? I mean, over the past year, they've really expanded, both in terms of people joining their executive board, but more importantly, acquisitions and you know, developing the business in that capacity. So yes, yeah, Spencer Clayton Jones is coming on board to work with Robert Forrester on their growth strategies. And that would imply, it doesn't take a brain surgeon to work this out, that Virtue is probably going to be growing even more over the next few years. So yeah, that was a nice bit of news from Virtue there this week.
Very good. I think you've said all can be said on that one. Yes. So I will move us swiftly on to another one. I've got myself into a nice complicated financial one, but I'm going to talk about CMS Kidderminster, who have moved into administration after their accounts revealed a £3.7 million stock discrepancy, which is quite a sum to have as a stock discrepancy, isn't it? So a bit of sad news there. Hopefully that can all be sorted out and they can be rescued. But they have called in administrators, which is not great news to hear for any dealership, is it? I mean, you must have looked at this batch and seen the figures and raised an eyebrow.
Well, yes. And I mean, it was a sharp contrast to what I was saying earlier on, where we've reported on many dealer groups, primarily the larger ones, of course, but we've reported on many car dealer groups this week who are doing quite well. They're selling more cars thanks to better supply. They're making more money from selling those cars, yada, yada, yada. And yet this particular business, it just seems as though times are pretty strained for them. So it's just yet another reminder that, everything is not plain sailing in our world at the moment, and we do wish them the best, of course.
Yes, we should say they did make a pre-tax profit of $487,000, but in the wake of this, obviously that becomes slightly complicated. That was for the year ending December 31st, 2021. But as we know, things can bounce back, as we know from other dealer groups who have gone through trying times of nature's not dissimilar to this.
Right, I'm just going to move us on to we reported on yet another scam car dealership this week. I mean, regular listeners will know that we are reporting on this all of the time. I mean, I think you get the same emails that I get, Johnny Ray, and this isn't an exaggeration. I mean, we get half a dozen emails about scam car dealerships every single day. We do investigate them. We don't report on all of them, but we do investigate all of them, and we report on the ones that we feel as though people should be made aware of. But it does see we do seem to have opened up a bit of a Pandora's box, or a can of worms, or whatever the phrase that I should use, but we do seem to have unearthed a bit of a problem here, how easy it is to set up a fake dealership, and this one in particular, SR Vans. They were using online profiles on eBay, Gumtree, Google to dupe buyers, and we were alerted by a particular buyer who paid a deposit on a Nissan Note, but the car never arrived. So he paid £1,200 for this car, which doesn't matter who you are, that's still a sizable amount of money to give a business, and the car doesn't arrive. What made this particular scam pretty convincing is that they were calling themselves SR Vans, but if you go away and do your due diligence, which is what we implore people to do before they consider buying a vehicle from a company, you go on Company's House. If you typed in SR Vans into Company's House, it would return a similar company by the name of SR Vans Limited. It's very easy for people to have got duped by this. Even more so that this particular scam dealership was using the same address as this perfectly reputable company called SR Vans Limited. We got in touch with a business that is operates nearby where this address is, and this business was told us that they've had many people turn up asking whereabouts is this business, and they're saying, well, no, it doesn't exist. Having to break the news to them that they've potentially been conned, or they've been talking to a business that doesn't exist. So yes, it's another reminder that people really do need to do their homework, and also it goes back to that cliched phrase that if it looks too good to be true, it probably is. But I'm sure that's a phrase that resonates pretty well with you, Laura, doesn't it? I mean, people are rightly concerned about buying the right things and not being conned out of their money.
Yeah, trust is super important. I think in this particular scenario, we do work closely, and we are able to respond and remove the business from eBay, which we did. And I think, yes, again, we've got a new verification program as well, so similar to Certified Recycled, which is called Verif, which is part of the dealer onboarding process. So, yeah, super, super important that and we do take these matters very seriously.
Yes, I was going to talk about that verification. Unfortunately, this, I think you just introduced it after this person had managed to sneak in, but yeah, that is a vital thing, because this is the kind of conversation we keep having is the places these things normally crop up are things like Facebook and so on, which of course have no verification whatsoever. So this is Facebook and so on is generally where people are getting duped out of their money on these things. So I think any platform that's introducing verification, I think that can only be a good thing.
So yes, so just to sort of wrap that up a little bit, it's very unfortunate that we have to report on these kinds of things. We don't like to do it, but also there's a greater piece that we're trying to just to help people and try and educate them that you need to do your research, and it's very easy to get conned and misled by things. So I mean, we've got you only need to do a quick search on our website to find our top tips guide to prevent being caught out like this. But yes,
the other thing I'll just slide in there is they were quite crafty in setting up a Google listing, weren't they, and then posted lots of fake reviews, and then were removing the reviews from people saying I've been scammed or this dealership doesn't exist. So it's a whole whirlwind of complication, isn't it?
Yeah, it is indeed.
Okay. Me, if I can squeeze one more in.
Yeah, I've got one more. So if you want to go for yours. Excellent. Yeah.
Okay, well, I might have stolen it. I'll squeeze one in, which is Auto Trader have expanded their offering by listing e-bikes, which is an interesting turn, isn't it? I mean, we're used to vans and motorhomes and all that other stuff on Auto Trader as well, but e-bikes is the new growing market that they're looking to target. So they already have more than 1,500 e-bikes from over 45 brands on their platform. And they reckon that will be, if we're looking into different mobility options, that is certainly one of them. And I suppose there are more and more people moving into electrically assisted, I should say, bikes. Have you got an e-bike, James?
No, I don't. No. I've got a car, quite a few cars. I don't have a bicycle. But when we did report on this story, I did immediately go on the Auto Trader bikes, the e-bikes part of the website. And I just had this sudden kind of confusion that came over me of, God, I know nothing about e-bikes. I mean, is that a good brand to go for, or should I be going for that one? Or but that one's cheaper than that one. And I sort of realized what it's like for people who know nothing about cars to actually go and try and find a car. And I can sort of now I can sort of understand what a confusing and potentially horrible experience it is.
Yes, I find that situation whenever I have a conversation about somebody with motorbikes, for example, which I believe Laura knows a thing or two about, but I'm ashamed that neither of us are bikists and can't say anything remotely clever about it. But there we are.
Yes.
Horses for courses.
Yeah.
Electric push bikes, I believe. Yes,
good move, and they are expensive.
They are incredibly expensive.
They are expensive. Yeah,
they are. I mean, my father was telling me recently he was considering buying one, and I nearly collapsed when he said how much they are. But yes. So if anybody wants to look at used and brand new e-bikes, Auto Trader can now help you with that. There we are.
That was almost sounded like a plug. Your checks are closed. Go on, okay, then. Well, our story.
Okay, well, it's not technically a story. Well, it is a story, but okay. We didn't write about it, separately. It was something that I covered in one of our 7 a.m. roundups, which, if nobody knows, at 7 a.m., we do a roundup of all the stories in the trade and nationally. And we put it live at 7 a.m. This particular little nugget sort of raised my eyebrows. And it is Fiat has created the world's smallest zero emission gelateria. Gelateria. I can't. I can say gelato, obviously, in an Italian accent, but gelateria, I don't know.
Oh, dear.
Basically, they've created an electric ice cream van.
I think it's gelateria, isn't it?
Gelateria. I
said that in a very gelateria. Anyway, carry on.
I don't know. But basically, they've just created an ice cream van. Well, not an ice cream van. It's a Fiat 500 E convertible with the roof rolled down. But quite a few modifications. There's the two 15-litre freezers in there, and they can play an Italian orchestral alert to let passers-by know that it's ready to serve them ice cream. The passenger and rear seats have been removed entirely, freeing up space for the ice cream attendant to move around. There's, in bad weather or in very hot weather, a little canopy can come up. And at first, I just thought that this is just a nice little PR thing. But when I did a little bit more research into it, it really is a massive thing, this, isn't it? Ice cream vans. About how diesel ice cream vans, of course, the traditional ice cream van, as we all know, not traditional, but more commonly, they are diesel powered, aren't they? And whenever you go to, I don't know, the seaside or... not me, but if I were to go to a festival, one of those music festivals, there are sort of ice cream vans there, aren't there, with their diesel engines running. And of course, there are massive concerns now, not only because...
Quite a bit more than ice cream vans there. There's generators and things for the speakers.
Yes, but I think primarily, in
areas
where
I love the idea of you going to a festival and having an ice cream. I like that a lot. That's
well,
great.
I don't know.
Not
I've never
a beer.
Been to I've never been to a music festival, so I don't know. But I am told that in areas of high population density, if you've got a diesel engine running, it's not great, is it? And it's not just that. It's also many councils, particularly Greenwich Council in June, they've proposed that they want to ban idling ice cream vans. There are quite a few... boroughs in London, they're all considering the same thing. And further afield in New York as well, they are potentially banning fossil fueled ice cream vans as well. So this is a massive problem.
I didn't know you New York had Mr. Whippy surfed out the side of a Ford Transit, but I'm learning something today.
Do you want to know an interesting fact about Mr.
I
Whippy?
I do.
So this is Alan's fact of the day. Mr. Whippy ice cream vans were introduced to the UK in 1958, but the brand was later bought by Walls, although it is now a generic trademark, meaning other suppliers can use it too. So more interesting facts
I'm
next week.
Reading from Wikipedia there.
No, I'm actually reading that from the Daily Mail. I'm ashamed to say, but there we are.
Shall I give you my thoughts on this?
Please do.
I am much less generous with my praise of this. I think it was a cynical PR exercise to make us remember that the 500E is a thing. And I just don't like all these silly things like, oh, it's a Fiat 500 ice cream van. No, it's not. It's got two little battery powered fridges in the back, and someone's made a man stand on the back seats with an ice cream scoop and then photoshopped it into London. It's not
Didn't Hyundai about 10 years ago, didn't they do something similar with an i10?
Well, they did, but they actually did it properly and
manufactured
it into an ice cream van. Which, all right, fine. But the subject of electric ice cream vans, obviously Nissan already made a concept one. That is a thing that's already happened with the ENV200, now discontinued.
Yes.
And I do believe you can buy, if you're an ice cream merchant, an electric Mercedes Sprinter or something from the proper ice cream van people that make those, whoever it is.
Mm.
I'll say William Morris, but it's not. That's the man with the patents. Somebody or other in Blackpool makes ice cream vans and makes electric ones.
Yeah.
So I suppose we will see more of it, just probably not a 500E. I mean, why didn't they do it with like a Fiat make electric vans? They've got like two of them, haven't they? Why didn't
they? But this is where you are absolutely right. It's a bit more of a PR stunt, isn't it? It makes a better imagery, doesn't it? If there's a nice two-tone Fiat 500 with a nice little twee little canopy out the top, as opposed to just a Fiat Ducato van, doesn't it? I mean,
Yes, I think that was some leftover PR department money at the end of the month.
Oh, that's quite a harsh thing to say, really.
Harsh but accurate. Yes. Okay, is that the end of our stories then?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so Laura, before I ask for your verdict, are there any stories you think we've missed this week?
No, I think you've covered everything that's key at the moment that's going on in the market. And I just love the fact you finished on a story about Mr. Whoopi with Fiat. Very, very apt for the summer.
Yes, now that it appears to be here, judging by
us. Yeah, well, I have always wondered why everybody calls their vans Mr. Whippy, but now I know it's a generic trademark. So this is what I'm taking away from this podcast. It's great.
And I think it's called Mr. Softy in the US. That's
it is.
Yeah.
I don't think that would work quite so well here somehow. The other excellent factoid that I would impart is that I read an interview with Evan Davis off of the BBC the other day, and he has a whippet called Mr. Whippy, which I thought was a fantastic name for a dog. But anyway, so I'm going to ask you, who do you think is the winner?
I'm here to talk about like green and sustainability. So I think James has it this week with his pitch on JLR's strategy for giving a bit of power back into the grid. So, and we love JLR at eBay as well.
Knew I should have started with that story.
Gosh, I mean, I think that's the first time I've won for months, isn't it, actually?
It is. It is.
Wow.
So I'll concede. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well done. And given that you wrote all of the stories that I actually talked about this week, I think that's fair enough. Well, all that's left for me to say is thank you to Laura for judging today. It's been great to have you on and great to hear about eBay's recycled car parts scheme as well. I think that's very important and hopefully something that grows a bit more across the industry, because I think we could all do with cheaper and greener car parts. And thank you as well to Batch for competing, and thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode, so make sure you're subscribed so you can be notified when that goes live. If you're listening on Spotify, swipe up now and vote on who you think won. If you want to check out the stories we mentioned today, go to cardealermagazine.co.uk or look in the show notes, wherever they are, and you'll find those and much more news besides. Thanks again, and until next time, goodbye.